This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's the beginning of spring remodeling frenzy. Now that the snow has melted, people can see how their properties have fared after a long winter and dream of improvements. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa with Bill McAnally of Iowa Central Community College. We'll hear more about deconstruction this hour, how to recycle what you tear down, how to find and use recycled materials for your construction projects. Also on deck, decks. Deck systems are still the number one home improvement, with 4 million decks built annually in the U.S. Also, why are more people decking out their homes with vinyl? We're live this hour with Bill McAnally, from basements to roofs and all in between. Talk of Iowa in 5 minutes following Iowa Public Radio and NPR News. And welcome to Talk of Iowa for this early spring sunny day. I'm Dennis Reese talking to Bill McAnally. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. Bill McAnally in Fort Dodge, director of the Industrial Technology Program at Iowa Central Community College. Good morning, Bill. Okay, Bill, are you there?
Sure am.
There we go. We have you. All right, it's nice in Fort Dodge today, too, right?
Oh, we're on already? What happened there? Did I lose you?
For about 1 second.
Oh, all right. No, yeah, it's nice today. In fact, I was going to open my window up, but everybody who rests in the office complains when it gets cold.
Well, it's kind of chilly still.
Ah.
Well, this has to be the busy time of year for you. I was just thinking, you know, there was so much snow over the past few months, you couldn't see your house.
That's right.
Now you can sort of see your house and think, I should do, 10 things to it here soon, right?
Or think, boy, I better get the handle lubricated on my Lazy Boy so I can look it outside.
That's right. I was reading somewhere, I couldn't believe this figure, there's 40 million remodeled decks gracing today's homes. What is it that people love about decks so much?
It's close, and it's fairly inexpensive, and you can get outside and you know, it's really, how many decks do you see in the front of the house? I mean,
they use them
for a place to escape. You know, the decks are just kind of, kind of a throwback to our old porches that we used to have. You know, it's a gathering area, a place to, you know, maybe if people like to entertain or whatever. But, you know, it's a nice place to kind of get away from things after work.
And what about this idea of building decks with vinyl?
You know, there's a lot of products out there. There's vinyl products. There's plastic wood combination products. There's a lot of new ones out there. You know, the nice thing about going with vinyl or some of the newer man-made products is there's a lot less maintenance. Especially if you go with treated wood or cedar. There's a lot of maintenance to be done. You know, usually at least twice a year you have to do something with it. Whereas the vinyl, you just kind of keep it clean. And the only downside with some of the vinyl products and the man-made ones is, you know, they're fairly expensive to start with. But if you value your time, you know, some people like to do maintenance. I mean, it's just kind of a no-brainer kind of thing to do for a couple days or something. But some people just want to have a deck, go out, and not have to do anything to it. And there's so many options and so many combinations, of either decks, or now you're starting to see so many, the outdoor, like a brick pavers or precast brick, like 16-inch by 16-inch pavers with landscaped walls and lights and fireplace or the big thing seems to be right now is, your outdoor cooking area with a grill integrated right into your landscaping. You know, it's another room is basically what it is. It's just, try to get people outside during, especially this time of year when, this Saturday, boy, if it's 70 degrees, you're probably going to see everybody hanging around their decks or something.
If you have a wood deck like me,
how
often should you scrub it down and, put, it's not paint. What do you call
it? Like a new sealer.
How often should you do that?
You know, it really depends. It depends on the weather. It depends on, how much sun your deck gets. If you have a lot of water that lays on a mine, mine's on the west side of my house, but I'm in a valley, but what I get is a ton of walnuts all the time on it. And so, you know, so I've got all these stains. You know, I usually seal it maybe, you know, just once a year, but I, last fall now, I just pressure washed the whole thing, and I've, tell you what, I actually kind of look at the, kind of like the look of just the pressure wash. It looks nice and clean, and I'll have to seal it now here pretty soon now that it gets a little bit warmer, but I was able to get all those, you know, walnut stains off, so that's something that I'm going to have to do, you know, probably, you know, every six, you know, well, beginning of the season and the end of the season, protect it for winter because we get a lot of ice, and then you get... you get a lot of snow buildup in some spots, but there again, it depends on how much sun hits it. You know, that's usually what breaks it down. It breaks down that sealer. The UV will, you know, that bright sun will bake it. And even some of the man-made products, you know, you see some discoloration, especially if you get dark colors. And so you have to think about too, you know, if when this, wherever it's at, you know, the dark color is going to be hot on the feet in the summer. So you see a lot of the vinyl ones are going with a, like a light gray or white, and there's less maintenance. But, you know, what I just really like to just pressure wash it and keep it clean.
Okay. It's Home Improvement Day with Bill McAnally from Iowa Central Community College. Our toll-free telephone line is 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. We'll answer your calls this hour. Should be lots of questions coming in. We have some in already. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Before we get to calls, I was pleased we were emailing yesterday, and you said that after our last discussion a few weeks ago when we talked about deconstruction, you got a lot of comments from people about how popular this has become as people are very cognizant now of you know, trying to recycle building materials as much as possible and using recycled materials as much as possible to, for their new construction. So it's a definite trend, and it's great news to hear about this.
You know, that's the first time I think in all the years we've been doing this that we stayed on the same topic all day, but then the amount of emails that we got here at the school and phone calls and contacts that were made to Shelley Codner up at Iowa Waste Reduction Center. And since that time, you know, they have a new manual or an updated manual from, if you just Google Iowa Waste Reduction Center, and just go to their downloads, you can download their 40-some page manual for free on how to handle, especially, you know, in the flooded areas, how to handle things that are contaminated, you know, because in the past that's been brought up in other shows, you know, what do we do with things that have been through the flood? You know, what can we do? There's, you know, besides the deconstruction, you know, part of it. But also after the show, I was able to go up to the U.S. Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, and talk to Bob Falk. He's the author of a book called Unbuilding. And that's kind of the kind of the Bible for, you know, the beginnings of deconstruction or the ease of deconstruction and all the things that are going on across the country. It's just amazing. You know, even siding with lead paint, they were able to figure out a way to just plane the paint off of the top of the wood down deep enough into the wood so they get all the lead, and then they burned it in a plasma furnace, generate electricity, so they have wood with no lead in at the end, and then when it was burned in the furnace, that all that was left was lead, and the lead buyers came in. So
it's
pretty cool.
But people actually buy lead?
Yeah, because there's still a commodity for lead. Yeah, when it was all burned, all the only residue that was left because it burned so hot that there was just the lead, and then the buyers came in and purchased it. So it kind of closed the whole loop. I mean, that's something I would have never thought of. And then speaking of lead, contractors in Iowa by the, I believe it's the end of this month, are supposed to be certified and have training in lead, basically, it's kind of a lead abatement course. It's a one-day course. And in fact, I'm taking mine in my eight-hour session next Monday. So they need to get a hold of their area community colleges and find out where the training's at. It's something that really hasn't been publicized too much, but if you're going to go in and remodel a house, if you're a contractor, you have to have this certification.
Yeah. If you're looking at old paint, and how do you tell if it has lead in it?
Well, they have these little lead testers
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really hard. You know, it's kind of funny when we've done buildings before, you know, the old, you know, even the you know, those metal tiles on the ceiling, you know, those old kind of printed 2-foot by 2-foot tiles in these old, you know, like department stores and that. And some, it was really weird. Some of them were just, they'd peg that meter out, this little tester that the lead guys use. It'd just peg it out, and then you'd go to some other part of the building, and nobody put any lead on it. They left it bare for a while and then painted it with latex. So you can't just go by the what you're looking at. You have to actually test it.
Okay. Let's go to calls. We'll start with Sam, who's calling from Des Moines. Good morning, Sam. Sam, you're on the program.
Did you mean Sarah?
I guess I meant Sarah. It says Sam, but sorry.
Oh, Sarah?
It's Sarah. Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Sarah. Sorry.
Okay. I don't know what kind of work person to call to repair or replace the horizontal wood that's beneath the roof overhang. Is that a roofer, or who would I call?
You mean the soffit area, the underneath?
Yeah,
that soffit. What you could do, if you don't, you know any contractors or, you know, have any that are friends, you know, if you go to like a lumber yard or, you know, like say Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, they usually have at their builder desks, they have a list of builders in the area. And then you can kind of, you know, go through their references, things like that. Some of them keep references, just have names, but you can also ask the people at the desk who they would recommend.
It would not be a roofer to do this?
No, usually it's a siding person, because usually the overhang is handled by someone that would do, you know, say vinyl or steel siding, and then they would they may fix that wood or put vinyl or steel underneath there, so there's no maintenance to it.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks a lot for that call, Sarah. seems like the last couple of programs, our first emailer is always Jeff from Carbon Cliff, Illinois. He writes, I'd like to install a new attic entrance to replace the current one in my home. The current scuttle hole is in the top of the shower, which is plywood with tile on the underside. It's not a perfect fit, and I recently noticed spots of mold appearing. What's the best way to seal that hole after replacing the moldy board?
And you know, I couldn't imagine a worse place to put a scuttle in above a shower.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to have moisture going in your attic, boy, there's the spot. He's pretty lucky if it's pretty lucky it just isn't black and fuzzy, you know?
Yeah, really.
Looks like a bad toupee or something hanging up there. First of all, I'd move it, get it completely away from there, put it into a closet or an accessible hallway. I would seal that one up. I mean, there's no way that I would ever use that location. Bathrooms, kitchens, anywhere with high moisture, like laundry areas, because that'll just go up in the attic. In fact, I'd really hate to see what's up in his attic right above that. But,
well, we have to take a break here, Bill.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. We'll be back in a minute. We'll be back in a minute. You're right. Home Improvement Day, Talk of Iowa, Iowa Public Radio. We'll be back in 60 seconds. 20 past 10, Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese with Bill McAnally of Iowa Central Community College. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. Our line to reach Bill is 866-780-9100. Let's go to Sally in Waterloo. Sally, good morning.
Good morning. We live in an older house. In fact, it's in a historic area. And we got a lot of moisture inside our walls and our living room wall. And this happened about 2 years ago. And we called a man, and he said that we needed caulking. He caulked it. We had it replastered and painted. And immediately, we got more wet on it. So that wasn't the solution. So then someone told us that we needed our eaves, and we have them cleaned a couple times a year, although we could probably have them cleaned every month. But anyway, so then they said we needed new gutters. So we called a couple of two or three gutter people for bids. Two of them said we needed 6-inch gutters, and to the tune of about $2,000. The third person we called, who was highly recommended, said, no, I don't want to put that wide of gutters on this because Then when you do that, when you get the ice in them, it's too heavy and it weighs it down. And I can see when it rains, water falling behind the gutter.
Sure.
And so what he said made some sense. I thought, well, maybe that ice has pulled that out.
Yeah.
And that's why it is. And his bid was only $1,000. So obviously I wanted to go with his bid, but I don't want to have to do the whole thing over again. And
well,
he said you need wider eaves to take it down, but not wider gutters.
Yeah. And it's hard to say where that water is coming from. Sometimes that water is going to back up and get into the wall. We're caulking. What kind of siding do you have? Is it stucco on that old house?
You know, just before they made this historic, the people who bought our house before put the vinyl siding on it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, because whenever it rains, you know, that water goes through that vinyl. If there's any wind at all, kind of gets on the backside, you can get trapped and sneak in around a window, too. As far as the gutters, you know, the only time you really need the 6-inch gutters is if you've got a lot of volume on a big, heavy rain, and it's a long distance, you know, from downspout to downspout. Because, you know, it's kind of funny, now that you bring that up, I really didn't notice it so much until you brought it up. But, you know, the places I saw that had wider gutters, yeah, they were kind of hanging off the building. We lost some here at the college because we had some bigger gutters. But I don't know if it's just, you know, it also depends on how they're attached.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is to make sure that gutter's attached so it catches that low dripping rain too, you know, just the mist. Because what it does is that water will go down and it kind of hangs on the edge of the shingle and then it goes down over the drip cap. And at the bottom, in the edge of this little drip cap, the metal kicks out so it falls in the gutter. Well, if the gutter's covering that, then the water gets behind the gutter and gets into your wall.
Okay. Say that. Could you say it one more time?
The gutter has to be able to catch not just big rains, but just light rain. So when the water drips off the end of the shingle, that it goes into the gutter, and not just there's a little metal drip cap. It's a little piece of metal underneath the edge of the shingle, and that metal is supposed to also kick the water into the gutter. Well,
okay.
If they're put on wrong, then the water gets behind the gutter and then gets into your wood.
Mm. See, everybody has talked about that we don't have straight fascia or something that they have to use these
sure the rounded ones.
Yeah,
but if they're put on correctly, they'll work just fine.
Okay, and then so
because they're going to be hanging down a little lower.
So you think maybe what can I do? Because we do have the vinyl. Is there anything that they can do to make that not go behind there?
Oh, no. You know, hopefully it's just that it's sealed good enough around the windows because they just probably put the vinyl over the original siding. And as long as the water doesn't get trapped above the window, that's usually what happens is it gets trapped in these little J-channel-shaped plastic or vinyl above the window gets trapped and sneaks in behind the wood. You may have somebody take a look at that.
Sally, we want to try to get some other calls.
Okay.
But
all right,
anyway,
thank you.
What about
screens? One more thing. What about the screens on the gutter?
That's kind of a 50-50, whether you want them or not. I don't really care for them, but some people do. They swear by them. I think jury's still out on whether they really work or cause more issues.
Okay,
thanks a lot, Sally. Conversation's going into the gutter here, Bill.
Yay, there we go.
Email number 2 from Jessica. I have scraped the acoustic popcorn off my ceiling, tried my best to wipe off any dust I want to texture with orange peel and repaint. Do I need to skim coat with drywall compound first or just spray the orange peel spray texture in a can?
Oh, well, I would... skim coat the whole thing. I did a week-long training one time through United States Gypsum out in Illinois, and they teach how to do real nice finishes. And even when we were done, you know, finishing up a wall that here in Iowa we would be all set, you know, to go ahead and spray, they really would like to see a very light skim coat over everything, kind of wipe it on, kind of wipe it off. But you're filling in all those little imperfections, and especially after you've scraped it, even though you're putting an orange peel on the ceiling, some of those lines will transfer through. So I think it's well worth your time to get a really quality job to skim coat that, and then, maybe before you spray, I don't, if you're going to use orange peel, they're probably going to paint it as use a product like USG First Coat. It's a very good heavy-based primer that also takes out imperfections, and then it kind of hides where you may have sanded. Mm-hmm. So when the light's just right, especially if you have a light right up against the ceiling, that you don't see those marks.
Another email from Tim, and we sort of talked about this at the very beginning, but anyway, what should you look for in a deck sealant, and how long should the sealing last before it needs to be redone?
Well, it just depends on what you're sealing now. What I was told by some engineers on wood products is that if you leave, like, say, wood decking, cedar, or the treated, if you leave them out very long in the sun, some of them, like cedar, may have to be sanded a little bit for the sealer to go into it. Where treated, let it dry out and then seal it. But look for usually a sealer that will penetrate, not one that just lays on top. You want a penetrating oil-type sealer.
Okay, let's go to Jenny next, who's calling from Pella. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Hey, more about gutters. My husband just hates gutters, and it's probably because we have a mature tree that's huge. And he always threatens to take them all off, and it just seems like a bad idea. Our house is over 100 years old, and it just seems like that's asking for a whole lot of trouble. But what's good for an old house?
Wide are the overhangs? Are they, on the old house, are they like, say 30 inches or so, really huge overhangs?
No, it's not huge, no. No, I mean, it's had a new roof put on it at some point, so I think that probably it may have at one point had a big overhang, but it doesn't anymore.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, the shorter overhang, you may be best to go ahead and have, leave the gutters on. The wider the overhang, the farther out away from the house the water falls. A lot of parts of the country are taking the gutters off, especially if it's a 32 or 36-inch overhang. And let the water, drop and hit the ground. And usually they put gravel down there so it doesn't just land in mud and splatter up against the house. But if you're going to take your gutters off, you have to really make sure that ground below the roof is sloping very well away from the house, because that's the idea behind the gutters, to get
the
water
away. That's my flowers, and I really don't want them to be pulverized.
Oh, yeah, they'll just get the heck beat out of them on a heavy rain. So,
But I just think he doesn't really know. I mean, if there's a new product as far as gutters go that does a better job. I mean, these are probably chintzy, but of course he's a do-it-yourselfer, so he would.
Well,
himself.
He can just put up a good. You can buy a good 6-inch gutter yourself and put the gutter covers over the top of them. Every house is different, every location's different, mm-hmm. but. At least you won't have the maintenance of having to clean them out as much.
Okay, Jenny, thanks a lot. We want to try to get one more call in before the break. We'll go next to Dysart. Greg is calling. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
And what's your question?
Well, we have a house that gets a lot of sun, and we just bought it 5 years ago, and the shingles are just damaged on it from tons of sun, and I've been thinking about going to a metal roof.
Okay.
One, I've worked in a number of places that have metal roofs. I've seen that. And also the price, they say, is about the same anymore. But I don't know much about metal roofs. Really, I'm kind of stuck there on they're coming to give us a bid. But
okay.
I know there's different gauges of metal. And it's kind of tough to, if you talk to me, I'm putting this metal roof on. Because I know I'm going to be replacing shingles every 5 years.
Okay. Greg, can you hang in there for about 5 minutes?
Sure.
And then Bill will answer your question. Sorry, but we have to go to about a five-minute break, Bill.
Okay.
We'll talk about that after the break, as Talk of Iowa continues in a few minutes after the Environment Report. 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Home Improvement Day continues in a few minutes. 10:36, Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese. It is Home Improvement Day with Bill McAnally of Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. And we were just getting into a discussion with Greg from Dysart about the idea of using steel shingles. And this is an intriguing idea.
Steel roof. Roof instead of shingles.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Well, okay. Yeah, because there's, we used steel shingles on the last house we did. They were fairly expensive. They looked really good. In fact, a couple of the appraisers thought they were asphalt just by the way they looked. But as far as steel roofs go, they're they're fairly expensive up front, but if you look at how long they last, and, you know, because, you know, we usually shingle here in Iowa, like every reshingle asphalt, like every 10 to 15 years where they wear out or hail or something. But and metal roofs hold up better to that, especially a standing seam. That's the difference because, you know, we've looked at prices of metal roofs before, and they go anywhere from, like, $65 a square for the materials, you know, which is 100 square feet, to like $600. It just depends on how complex the roof is and what kind of metal. You know, for the cheaper ones are the ones with the nails showing, kind of like what you'd see on, you know, like an ag building. But the best ones are to put the hidden fastener roof, a standing seam, like you sometimes see on a commercial building. And, you know, over the term of, say, you know, 20 to 30 years, it ends up being less money to have that metal roof. Plus, if you get a lighter color, you're gonna cut, you know, cooling costs, and usually on your house, your insurance, your home insurance usually goes down when you put a metal roof on as well. I pulled up a thing here while we were on break on the insurance rates. Some places 15 to 35% you get a savings on your fire insurance. There's also especially on the lighter colors of the metal roofs, you can get a $1,500 credit on your taxes for energy efficiency. So the only downside is, though, is it usually has to be done by somebody, you know, very good professional that knows how to put those on, because there's a lot of fasteners, especially if you have valleys and such. But that's what I'm putting a metal roof on my house next time. Just, I just think it's, you know, the best investment long term.
Well, we catch sun. There's no trees or anything to the east of us, so the sun comes up and it just beats that side of the house. It beats the south side. The shingles have started to curl there, and on the western side, they're perfectly fine. So I know, and I've been told by people in that area, yep, south side, every 5 years at least, you're going to be replacing your shingles.
Yeah, you know, it kind of depends on the pitch and what color are the shingles right now.
They're a black shingle now, and see, I don't have my house doesn't have gables. It comes down on the side, so I got shingles.
Oh, okay.
Literally.
Oh, like a
hip
roof.
Yeah, and that's where the problem really starts to come in, and it's around that corner. But when we moved in, they redid the whole house and put all new, everything's new underneath. So this is the time that I'd want to do it.
Yes.
So I don't. Well, I appreciate your help.
You bet. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call from Dysart. Greg called. So there is a steel shingle, Bill.
The ones that we use, it's called Decra, DECRA, and they're very fast to put on. They're expensive, but they have like a 50-year warranty. But you know, if you put them on once, that 50-year seems awful light, because you know, we run over them with trucks, backhoe, you name it, and you stand on, jump on, beat on it. And
do they look different from a normal shingle?
Well, they're made in bigger pieces. They're
about
2 foot by 4 foot, but they go on fast. But from the ground, they, you know, to the untrained eye, usually no.
Okay.
In fact, they look a lot better.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they do. And you don't, you know, the thing is, the granules are epoxied onto these shingles, so you don't have, you know, your yard and your downspouts full of, you know, all the granules off your asphalt shingles filling up your gutters.
Yeah.
So, they're really a nice quality product.
Ian is next in Fairfield. Hello, Ian.
Hello, good morning. I've been doing a lot of remodeling over the last 20-plus years, and sometimes I tear off a roof and I'll tear the gutters off, and I just don't bother putting them back on because I don't have the time or the money or, you know, see the need for it. And so over the years I've been, you know, looking at my basement, watching it to see how it's doing and without gutters. And to the best that I can determine, the gutters really don't seem to make much difference with the kind of soil we have around here. You get a little bit of rain, it mostly just runs away, and, you know, people have a lot of different kinds of basements, of course.
Sure.
But I've just got an old fieldstone basement, 100-year-old house. It's a pretty leaky basement, but, you know, I get a little bit of water, goes down the floor drain, you know, if it get, you know, a fairly heavy rain. But then once it gets really wet and the ground becomes saturated, the ground, you know, gets to the point where it can't really run off anymore, and pretty much all that water ends up in your basement. That's my experience.
yeah.
all the excess. So my point is that I don't really get the point of gutters. I mean, I can see for some applications, for some people who have maybe a finished basin and they're trying to keep every drop of water possible away from their foundation. You know, yeah, definitely, you know, to do everything you can because you've got, you know, things down there you don't want to get wet. But for people who have, you know, just a standard kind of basement with floor drains and you know, they keep everything a little off the floor, I don't see the point. If you have to take them off, why bother putting them back on? I have my wife thinks I'm crazy, but everybody else thinks I'm crazy. Told my neighbor this. He said, well, we have to talk about this.
Yeah, I'm kind of with your neighbor. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I like to really have a dry basement.
I think it's just a scam for gutter companies, you know, to keep them in business. You know.
Well, the only one downside that does come is if you ever do want to sell it, you know, on that disclosure statement, and it would, do you ever add water in your basement? And a lot of times that is a killer on a sale. Because the next person may want to, you know, finish it off. And they can go and put the gutters on. But it also depends on what kind of, like, you know, you don't get a whole lot. But in some cases, if the soil's fairly flat around the house and or they backfilled and they put clay in the wrong place, every drop of water off the roof comes into your basement. It just,
yeah.
You know, it, but it depends.
Well, I know some people do seem to get more than others. You know,
oh, yeah.
Like you
yeah.
say, you just turn on the spigot outside and it just, you know, runs.
Oh, yeah.
House,
it comes right to your basement.
Yeah, I've seen that. So, anyway.
Well, right, you know, yeah, that's the nice thing. Everybody can do what they want.
Okay, Ian, thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for the call. Ian is going to start the anti-gutter society.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, he's got, you know, but you know, he's got a point.
Mm-hmm.
But right, I'm with his neighbor.
Okay. All right. Well, John is next in Cedar Falls. Good morning, John.
Oh, hi.
Morning.
Yeah, I live out in the country, so of course I have a septic system. It's probably 14 or 15 years old. I get the tanks pumped regular. There's no problem there, but how often do you need to inspect the system, you know, the drainage tiles, the part out in the field, and is that something I could do, or do I have to hire somebody to do it? How do you inspect that type of thing?
You know, that's a good question. I've got a septic tank. I haven't really pumped mine out, but more than a couple times. And the last time we did, I inspected it, and I'm not the happiest with what the concrete looks like on it. But
well, yeah, my tanks are fine. I'm talking about the
down in the leach field.
The leach field.
Yeah, I don't really, you know, and unless it's not perking, you know, right, I don't really know, because normally it should just stay fine, because you shouldn't have any, as long as that tank's working fine, you shouldn't have any solids, so it should just keep working. I don't know if yours is concrete or yours is plastic. You know, maybe have the person installs septic tanks, you know, check with them or with the county sanitarian. That's who I would go to.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, go to that county sanitarian. There we go.
Okay, great.
Okay.
That's good advice.
And how deep down are the
They're not very
line?
Deep.
No.
Sometimes they're only two feet, you know, and because they don't want them down very deep. Normally they're like two. That's why we don't want to be driving across them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if I wanted to do a lot of digging, I could dig a big hole and just take a look at it.
Yeah, you might look a little silly out there, but yeah, you could.
Well, I don't think the deer would mind.
No, they wouldn't.
All right, thanks, John.
Right.
Yeah, the county health department actually has
yep.
will have a map of your septic system.
Well, you
amazingly
hope so.
Enough. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Dick is next in Iowa City. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning. I live in a brick ranch style house that's about 60 years old. I bought it about 6 years ago. And it has a basement in the middle of the house, and then it's pier and beam on the east and west ends of the house. The access to that the pier and beam area is from the basement, so you don't have any access areas from the outside. But it does have vents.
Okay.
Now, the first years I lived here, it was very damp in the basement, so I put a dehumidifier, and it just pumped water out like you wouldn't believe.
You bet.
And then last summer I tried something. I didn't open the vents. And again, there are, you know, screened areas from these crawl spaces into the middle of the basement.
Sure.
I ran the dehumidifier. It didn't get as damp in the basement, and I'm just wondering if that's the best way to go, or should I open the vents? It seemed to me it was pulling the humidity right into that crawl space from the outside, and by keeping it closed.
Right. You're not in a flood zone, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so, well, what's changed in the last probably 10 to 15 years is the crawl spaces should be completely sealed with no vents, and that the you have soil floor in there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's cover that with like a 6 mil polyethylene sheeting.
Okay.
And then insulate the side walls with like 2 inches of foam. Don't throw fiberglass down in there because it just gets wet. You can have somebody spray foam the walls, or you know, use the hard boards, but then also put foam in between the floor joists. What you're doing then is you're stopping the moisture from coming up through the soil, even though it may look real dry.
Yeah.
You have moisture from coming up, stops radon.
Sure.
And then now it's a tempered airspace, so it'll also cut down your heating and cooling.
Well, now, it is insulated underneath, but it's fiberglass. That was
going
to be
before. Yeah, and so this is really going to help it because long term there could have been some moisture issues with that moist air in that crawl space going up,
right,
and it goes through that fiberglass and then hits that surface.
So put a sheeting on the side walls, and actually a half inch sheeting underneath would.
Well, no, I wouldn't even. You don't have to do anything to the floor.
Just
you know, you can put. We usually put 2 inches of foam over the ground, 2 to 3 inches of foam on the side walls, and in between the floor joists. I mean, at the band joist. I mean, you know, I said that incorrectly. Where the wall and the floor meet, that rim joist area, put foam in between there. But the whole rest of the floor you can leave the fiberglass or take it out. Either way.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay,
appreciate
thanks
it.
For that call from Iowa City. We have lines open, believe it or not. 866. Never happens. Never happens. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have an email from Julie, who is writing from Delaware County. My husband and I built a new home in 2009. We live in rural Delaware County. We are very interested in a solar heat exchanger to supplement our LP heating. I would like to install the solar panels on the south side of our home. Can this installation be done with a general electrician? Also, do these heat exchangers tie into our furnace?
It depends. You can use, with the solar heat exchanger, if you're just talking air, you can tie that in to your furnace ductwork. There's you'll have to have an HVAC person work with that. If you're using the solar for hot water, you can run the water through a collector, which would also, you know, you would have that an air handler run across the tubing. It just depends what kind of a solar heat exchanger you're talking about, but you'll need get a licensed electrician, a licensed HVAC person to work with these properly, because some of the units need to have a siphoning system to pull the fluids out so they don't freeze. It just depends on how, you know, what type or how expensive of a unit you're purchasing.
All right. Lines are now all full. That took about 1 second. And David is first up from Hillsboro. Good morning, David. Try that again. David, are you there?
I've got a story and a half, a little 70-year-old home. And the upstairs has had the center of it built into a master bedroom. And it's been well insulated. But on each side of it, there's a crawl space. Now, the floor, which would be the ceiling of the downstairs, has insulation, but there's no insulation on the roof itself, and I get a large buildup of ice during the winter. That area needs to be insulated also, am I correct?
Well, you know, you have that kind of knee wall situation. Yeah, the best thing to do is just insulate that ceiling, all the way from where the overhang is, all the way up where that wall that separates that kind of storage area and your room, because
right,
you can go ahead and insulate the you know, the floor of that storage area, but then you have to treat that like it's an attic that's exposed to the outside. So that means the backside of that knee wall has to be insulated the same as what's downstairs on the rest of the house. Those are always been tricky areas on these older homes, you know, that is it outside? Is it storage? Is it a closet? You know, is it an attic? But yeah, you're probably getting a lot of moisture from either from below or from sideways from that bedroom area. The easiest thing to do is just insulate that ceiling.
So, and that would be the fiberglass insulation with the paper on one side, and you staple it in.
Well, the best thing to do is if you're going to use fiberglass, just use the friction fit, and then put 1-inch foam underneath it. 1-inch blue,
okay.
Blue, pink, the extruded polystyrene type foam, the ones that are colored. But you can put the fiberglass, but you may have to leave some. You may have to put some wind chutes, depending on the house. You almost have to see it. It might be an idea to bring in a contractor just to have them look at it before you tie into that. Because in your case, you still may need to have some attic ventilation between those rafters.
There, the soffit area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was going to use blown insulation, but then I can't store anything in there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Here's an email from Barb. We have had ice dams that have created ceiling leaks over the past couple of years on a 10-year-old house. It happens in the bonus room over the garage where we have built, where we have bat insulation in the slanted ceiling and air vents under the insulation between the rafters. The roof is steep with a 12-12 pitch. How can we correct the problem?
You're going to have to add more insulation. That's the one thing there's a tricky point there. You almost have to kind of look at it, but you've got to get more R value there, and somehow you're either going to have to add more insulation on the bottom side by, like, say, usually the least amount of space would be to add some foam to it, or you can go to a hot roof. And that's a judgment call. You're going to have to get a contractor in on that, where you do not have any wind chutes and you completely fill that cavity with insulation. And so then it stops the airflow, so you gain more insulation and you don't have sometimes as much issues with ice dams. A couple sections in my house are that way. I've completely filled it. I made it into a hot roof with no ventilation, and there's absolutely zero ice dam issues there.
Well, ice dams are such a problem.
They are. You know, it's not just a lack of insulation. There can be 10 or 15 causes, and that's where a case where you want to bring somebody in that's very experienced with ice dams and insulation and moisture flow. And sometimes that takes some extra training. So ask your contractor if they've been going to any sessions on anything with building science, because that's an area where building science really comes into play.
Okay, let's go next to Brian, who's calling from Burt. Hello, Brian.
Hello there. My question is on, I got a crawl space with a half basement underneath a 100-plus-year-old house that I've just got done residing, and I've replaced a few windows. My question is you were talking earlier about insulating, you know, how to insulate the inside. I was wondering, can you do the outside? You know, is there some type of paneling you can put on the outside of the house?
Yeah,
foundation?
You bet. You can put like 2-inch, you know, extruded foam, like, a, you know, Dow foam or something like. You can put that on the outside, make a special flashing at the top of it so that the water comes down the siding and it goes over the foam. The tricky part is covering that foam. They do make products that are foam that have a kind of a stone finish on the outside. How much is sticking up out of the soil?
It's a couple feet. I mean, I need to do some landscaping out front of it and this and that. And that's why I was just kind of looking to see if that's a possibility.
Yeah, it is. It's a very good possibility. And then there's products. There's one that we use a lot. It's called Nailite. Nailite. There's some products at the big box stores, lumber yards. It's kind of a fiberglass panel. They're about 18 inches tall. And then that covers that foam. And what you really want to look at is get on the internet and just say, you know, insulated foundations, and then hit exterior. Just add that, and you'll start pulling up a lot of different pictures and applications.
Okay. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
We've got an email next from Wayne in Marshalltown. We have a 12 by 27 addition built in the mid-60s. The pitch is 1/12, and currently is roofed with 17-inch lapped wide salvage roll roofing.
Sure.
That needs replacing. How can I add R value and re-roof with a longer lasting material? Is Duralast membrane roofing white or its equivalent satisfactory?
Yeah. It is, but I would put like 4 to 6 inches of, you can just put the white foam over the top of the roof that's there, and then put this new, basically the rubber membrane over the top of that, and it'd be just like a commercial roof.
Okay, let's get one more quick question in from Charlotte, who's calling from Charles City. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
If you could, I'm sorry.
A quick
yes.
question.
Okay, I don't know how quick it will be. We have had, the last 2 years, we've had water backing up into our basement from our septic tank, and we've had it about 10 years, and it happens always late February, first weekend in March, or week in March. We've had to have the septic tank pumped up twice, out twice, which gets extremely expensive.
Sure.
Where do we start to try and figure out what's causing the problem once the ground's thawed and we can start researching this?
And, Bill, you have 25 seconds.
Okay, I would get the county sanitarian out there to take a look at it. Maybe it was an installation issue when it was first put in, because it shouldn't be backing up in the house. It's probably taking on moisture, you know, maybe even groundwater from somewhere. So get a hold of maybe a different plumber that you've been bringing in, and then get the county sanitarian involved.
Bill, thanks so much. The hour has gone very quickly.
Yes,
appreciate
it did, Dennis. Thanks a lot. I just want to say hi to my mom again.
Okay, right. Great. Thanks a lot.
Yep,
Bill McAnally, Director of the Industrial Technology Program at Iowa Central Community College on Home Improvement Day. Our student assistant in the program today was Christoph Mai. Iowa Public Radio is a producer of Talk of Iowa theme music as well. And written by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa back tomorrow at 10 on Iowa Public Radio.